Call the meeting to order. The regular meeting of the Unalaska City Council is called to order at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, June 11th. I'll ask Councilman Nicholson to read the mission statement.
To provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Thank you, Councilman Nicholson. City Clerk, may I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman?
Here.
Ms. Luby?
Here.
Mr. Nicholson?
Here.
Mr. Longo? Mr. Tungo?
Here.
Mr. Tudikoff?
Here. Councilman Longo is asked to be excused for work activities. He is excused. We do have a quorum. Please stand and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I want to welcome everyone in the chambers this evening. You have a full schedule. Appreciate you being here and those of you online. This time, I'll need a motion to adopt the agenda.
I make a motion to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Nicholson, seconded by Councilman Luby. Yeah. And Councilman Tungo.
I move to amend the agenda to add presentation by IFHS before item 6A, before executive session. If I can get a second, please.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungo, seconded by Councilman Luby.
Yeah.
To amend the agenda. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, I'll call for a roll call on the amendment.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Tungo?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. On a roll call vote of 5-0, the amendment passes. Now back to the main motion to adopt the agenda. Hearing no discussion, a call for roll call on the adoption of the agenda as amended.
Mr. Tungo?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Motion to adopt as amended has been approved on roll call 5-0. Okay, what was that again?
That was like mission of peace that I did recognize. I recognize everyone best I can.
Okay, we're on item 6. Mark?
Excuse me. We have Mr. Ferdinand Lopez from board member of the clinic to make the presentation.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, and everyone in attendance. As you may know, I'm Ferdinand Lopez, a member of the Board of ELUC Health and Services. We noted that the agenda included an executive session to discuss IFHS funding, and we appreciate the opportunity to come before the council to anticipation to that discussion. And also, I prepared a letter, and I hope everyone had a chance to read it. Without more detail, we are not entirely sure what will be discussed in the executive session, but I assume it's related to the recent actions with regards to YPHS leadership. Our current CEO, Noel Ray, will be leaving the organization in early July. We would like to use this time to assure the council that the current operations and anticipated expansion of services should not be disrupted by this transition. All of our staff at IAPHS remain in place and are committed to providing quality care to the community. The board continues to implement the transitions plan that will provide interim leadership with the search for a new CEO is conducted, and we will be welcoming a PU member to the board soon to assist with that plan. At present, we have asked the current staff to step in to provide administrative and operational support until the interim and or final replacement is found. Rather than look at this change as an obstacle, IAPHS considered it as an opportunity for growth and transformations. A significant part of this growth is the new building project, which greatly enhanced the services we are able to provide. The board is actively engaging with the staff and contractors to keep that project moving forward on schedule, from design to construction and eventually the opening and operations. Our search for a new leadership will certainly include looking to someone with experience and energy to take this project and oversee our expanded operation following its opening. The board values its relationship with the council, with the community, and it takes responsibility to the community very seriously. The board continues to hold regular business meetings and is working closely with the staff to address operational issues and follow up on staff concerns. This includes looking into questions raised regarding ongoing legal and funding obligations and ensuring the organization is compliant with all requirements. We would like to emphasize that the care and services continue uninterrupted, and we do not anticipate any issue in implementing the services funded by the city. And we want to continue to open dialogue with all interested parties, and we will welcome any question you may have.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Does the council have any questions at this time? Okay, thank you, Mr. Fernandez Lopez. For your comments, we'll take them under consideration in our executive session with discussion on the clinic.
Thank you very much, Council. Thank you very much. Thank you. Good evening.
Now we're on six, item six, executive session, the Olick Family and Health Services Incorporated funding. A motion to go into executive session.
I move to enter into executive session to discuss matters that, if immediately disclosed, would then adversely affect the finances of the city. Present in the executive session will be the mayor, council, physically present, City Manager William Hanka, City Attorney Charles Casciola.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungo, seconded by Councilman Nicholson to go on the executive session. Roll call, please.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Tungo?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
On a motion of 5-0, the council has approved going into executive session. And it's 6:12 p.m. Roll call vote of 5-0. We're in executive session. Take a couple of minutes to clear the room. We also got out of executive session at 7:21 p.m. We're now on item number 7. And that's approval of the minutes of previous meeting. We have a motion and a second to approve the proposed minutes of the meeting held May 28, 2024.
Sir, I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of May 28, 2024.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Luby, second by Councilman Tungo. Hearing no objection, the proposed minutes are approved. Objection. Minutes are approved. Next item 8, reports to the city manager. Turn this over to you.
Thank you. In the packet, you have my report for this meeting. I'll just point out a few items. One, the internet service request for proposals has been issued. Proposals are due June 21st. We were talking about a legislative fly-in this summer, and we've canceled that because it's in this election year and no one knows who's being elected or not. And so it seems it's not prudent of us to bring folks out until we know. The Fisherman's Memorial working with OC on a final lease. So the terms have been agreed to between the two entities, the city and OC. It'll be a 10-year lease. So hopefully that will be coming forward soon. And then I wanted to point out that I would like to engage a consultant on behalf of council to work on a fiscal sustainability plan. Yeah, keep talking about that, but we're talking about elements of a plan, and I'd like to actually have a real plan. Our investors don't do that type of thing. We'd have to find a consultant that we could actually talk about how we do budgeting, how we do CMMPs, and then investments, et cetera. And that's the kind of thing that would queue up some of your discussions and decisions in the future. So I'm interested in pursuing that, and I'd just like to hear what you all think about that at some point. So, and I think we're down 13 employees in terms of vacancies. I like that number. I'd like it to be less, but it's better than 33 or whatever it was like a year ago. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, City Manager. Any questions, or Councilman Coleman?
Yes, thank you. First off, OC lease. Was that decided on a plot of land? Last I heard or recall is that the preferred site was not available.
I've been made aware that the preferred site is what we're going to be leasing. I don't think it's as large as perhaps what was initially discussed, but it should be of sufficient size. So it's up there on.
Beg your pardon.
As Cartland secretly told me that it will be on the next meeting.
Oh, well, that's right. That's good to know. Okay. So one other item, the fiscal, you called the fiscal sustainability plan. We have the investment policy statement to establish a permanent fund. Are you lumping that in with this, or is that something different?
Something different.
Okay.
And we have those about ready to go.
Okay.
Just a matter of getting it on the agenda for you. So I'm hoping to have it on the second June agenda or July agenda.
Okay. Thank you. It's good to know.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Councilman Luby.
So the fiscal sustainability plan, I think that's a great idea. It seems like there's lots of financial questions back and forth between council members, and I think that would be a good thing for us to work on. It gives you a little bit of direction on what we need, and it also helps us to stay on task of what we need to see. So I think it's a great idea.
Okay, any further questions for the city manager on his report? Any update? All right, thank you. Next item, the Board of Commission minutes. There'll be no presentation. They're included in the packet. The Library Advisory Committee meeting minutes of April 1st, 2024. They're in the packet. And next item is the community input and announcements. This is a time for members of the public to provide information to council or make announcements of interest to the community. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, state your name.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. This is Peggy McLaughlin, resident of Unalaska. I am provided through the clerk for you a packet of information regarding information on the senior citizen sales tax refund, and I'm going to read the cover letter of that packet into the record. Dear Honorable Mayor Tudyakov and Unalaska City Council members, I'm writing to seek clarification regarding the senior citizen sales tax refund authorized under Unalaska City Code Ordinance 6.40.050 Section C. The code, as written, is inconsistent and possibly contradictory, resulting in senior citizens being denied refunds they might otherwise have qualified for and received. I'm respectfully requesting the City Council to clarify this section of code for future applicants. Please also find attached additional documentation, correspondence related to a recently denied application and appeal for a senior citizen sales tax refund. The attachment includes correspondence between the applicant, city officials, and the city attorney. The language as written under Unalaska Code 6.40.050 Section C was reviewed by Council in March and April of 2023. Stated on the record during those meetings and specific to the intent of the edits that were adopted, Council wanted to strengthen the eligibility requirements, to solidify year-round residency requirements, and to reduce the opportunity for fraudulent applications. Council chose to add Section 5 as new qualifying language, which states, quote, applicants shall prove residency in Unalaska by providing to the city clerk evidence of either current voter registration in the state of Alaska at an address in Unalaska or evidence of approved eligibility for the state of Alaska permanent fund dividend for the current year at an address in Unalaska. At the city clerk's discretion, other proof of residency in Unalaska may be accepted, unquote. This section of code defines a mandatory requirement for proof of residency and gives applicants two options by which to provide this proof. The state of Alaska permanent fund dividend is one of the options that satisfies this mandatory proof. Further, the Alaska state statutes have defined the qualifiers for residency for the PFD program to include defining eligible applications on behalf of an estate. The attached denial letter states that, quote, actual eligibility for senior refund is dictated by the Unalaska Code of Ordinance, not state statutes or regulations, unquote. This becomes a circular argument with the Unalaska Code of Ordinance uses a qualifying program with defined criteria under Alaska state statute as proof of qualifying for an Unalaska program. Additional contradiction surfaces in the language describing qualified residency in the current year and a process for proving residency based on criteria from a previous year. The qualifying language under Unalaska Code Ordinance 6.40.050 Section C. Number one, to be eligible for the refund, the consumer must be 65 years of age or older by March 31st of each year, be a resident of the city for at least 30 days prior to their application, and file a timely application for refund with the city. The application form may require the consumer applicant to provide proof of age and of residency along with other information reasonably necessary to administer this refund. The claim for refund may be made only by filing a timely application with the city clerk, unquote. In theory, with a qualifying age, one could move to the island at the beginning of the application period, live in Unalaska for 30 days, and qualify for the refund without having been a resident in the previous year. The payment thus becomes a credit rather than a refund for sales tax actually paid to the city of Unalaska. It appears that one could live in Unalaska and actually pay city of Unalaska sales tax for the qualifying time required to receive a PFD, die, and use a qualified PFD application as a mandatory proof of residency per Unalaska City Code. However, the recent application filed on behalf of an estate and using this definition to prove residency was ruled ineligible to receive the refund, even though the application meets the residency requirements as described by the State of Alaska Permanent Fund dividend qualifying criteria. Council has made clear on numerous occasions that this ordinance is intended to provide after-the-fact relief for senior citizens who live in Unalaska and who are paying the City of Unalaska sales tax during the previous qualifying year. The current inconsistencies make it difficult to ensure that the intent of the council to provide senior citizens with sales tax refund and the literal meaning of the code are implemented consistently. I respectfully ask council to review this section of code to clarify council's intent as to whether this is a refund or a credit, and whether council's intent is clearly and consistently represented in the language of the code. Thank you, and of course, you can reach out to me for questions.
Thank you. Next.
Good evening. Catherine McGlashan, Unalaska Visitors Bureau. Just want to give you an update on our marine area. Testamina arrives on Saturday, and Tuesday, June 18th, the Westerdam arrives. They have 1,800 passengers and 773 crew. So it's a big boat that will be passengers all over. We have the Museum of Illusions in collaboration with us. They'll be doing tours along with Linda Liebeck Robinson, and we will have four vans doing tours also. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Mayor?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. Just wanted to say that the Unalaska Pride event has a new date. It's on June 28, 2024. That's Friday, from 5 p.m. until 7 p.m. at the Unalaska High School parking lot across from the Burma Road Chapel. And then I have Mr. Kelty on Zoom, and he would like to provide a comment as well.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I just left Kodiak here this morning, where I was attending the North Pacific Council. I just have a couple of items I would mention. In the middle of the meeting, they took 2 days and did a climate change workshop for 2 days. And it was very interesting, and I was glad I was there to be able to attend to that. I'll share some material on that workshop when I get back home and get to my equipment. Other than that, a couple other highlights was the 60 over pot cod program for LAP program, which is a limited access privilege program. It's a rationalization plan. After being mothballed for about 5 years, it looks like it's going to move forward now. The council passed the motion to start working on it. When you do a rationalization plan, it's not an easy program. It probably is going to take 1 or 2 years before it gets approved, and then it's got to go to the Secretary of Commerce. But that's probably the last major fishery for the 60-foot over pot boats. Most all of the other fisheries have some kind of a rationalization plan. The last one done last year was for the catcher vessel trawl fleet that delivers shoreside. They've got their LAP program going. So that's a little bit of good news. I think, the race for fish is never a good thing. You cancel the race for fish, you can do a better job on bycatch and move around and have more opportunities if there's a crab season sometime in the future and snow crab and things like that in the wintertime. Moved up on forward the 17-year review of the crab rationalization plan. They have it was quite a large document. I think it was very well done. There's a couple things they're going to look at. The processors and the harvesters, there's some disagreement on the binding arbitration plan that they have to work on, and also sea shares for captain and crew is going to be looked at in the rationalization plan. I think other than that, there are some other programs that are moving forward for the halibut fleet of getting access to other areas in Area 4, 4A, and not 4A, but 4B, and then the ones up in the Pribilof area. There's going to be some.
Sounds like we lost Frank there. Anyone else on Zoom or telephone?
No, sir, not for this time.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on. Next item is item 10. Next public comment on agenda items. This is a time for members of the public to provide information to the council regarding items on the agenda if they don't want to wait until the item comes up for the regular agenda. To comment later during the regular agenda, you need to sign up with the city clerk. Please come to the podium, use a microphone, and state your name. Comments. Public comments on the agenda items.
Good evening. My name is Rachel Vernon, and this is my husband, Levi Vernon. It's going to be kind of hard for me, but we were Ollie's parents, our owners. Our dog was attacked. So we just wanted to make a statement about this complaint that you'll be seeing later. So Ollie was our 17-pound Labradoodle. He was 3 years old, and he was very, very sweet, loving, just the best dog we could ask for. The past 2 months since his attack have been very difficult for me and Levi and our toddler. She misses him very much. Not only are we grieving for him, but just the aftermath of the attack, like witnessing that has been really hard for Levi. He was also physically injured, but thankfully he is almost fully recovered from that. It has also taken a sense of our safety away. We don't feel comfortable going on a lot of the public trails anymore. Ollie's attack and death were completely preventable. There was no reason why they should have been put into that situation. And it's actually really frustrating that we had to go through that. We just wanted to say that we're really thankful that this is being brought to your attention tonight. And we know that you guys will do what's best for our community. It's just our hope that nobody else ever needs to go through what Levi and Ollie went through on April 3rd. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Does anyone else wish to speak on agenda items?
Yes, Mayor. We have a written comment submitted, which our deputy city clerk will read into record. And we have a person in Zoom who would like to also provide a comment regarding resolution 2024-24.
Dear Mayor and Council, I'm writing this in support of resolution 2024-24. Our dog Luna was the dog that was attacked in October. While on a leash, on a walk approximately 100 yards from where we live, she was grabbed by the neck, shaken, and dragged. We will forever be grateful to the people who met us and dropped off supplies late at night to help her, the veterinary guidance we received, and to ACO Sean Peters. These three dogs are known knowns, and they continue to negatively affect the public. I get texts weekly asking if our neighbors' Malamutes are still around because people want to go for a walk in the area but don't feel safe doing so, knowing that three vicious dogs may be loose. One time is a mistake. Two times with no corrective action is obvious negligence. It is time for further action to make our community safer. Sincerely, Megan Dean.
Okay, thank you. You have someone else?
Yes, Mayor. Go ahead, Ms. Enlow.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. This is Carlin Enlow, and I'm going to speak in encouragement and support of what's proposed to you guys for resolution 2024-24. I was involved in one way or another in responding to both of the cases that you just heard about. I don't believe that the owner is capable of caring for or managing these dogs. And I am incredibly concerned that if something is not done, that there will be more attacks on other people's pets or other community members or people's children. So I'm hopeful that you can allow the city to pursue this lawsuit, because I don't see another way that the owner is going to respond to being responsible for his dogs. And that's as short as I'm going to keep it tonight.
Okay, thank you. Are there anyone else on Zoom or telephone?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Next item is item 11. Public hearing. Members of the public may testify about any item set for public hearing at this time. Anyone in the chambers? Anyone on the phone or Zoom?
No, sir.
Thank you. The public hearing is now open. 7:44 p.m. First item is Ordinance 2024-08, adopting the fiscal year 2025 operating budget and capital budget. Anybody here wish to speak? City clerk, are any written comments or on Zoom?
No, sir. There were no written comments, and no one in Zoom indicated they wanted to make a testimony.
Thank you. This time, the public hearing is now closed at 7:45 on Ordinance 2024-08. The next up is the work session. I have a motion and a second to go into our work session.
I make a motion to go into work session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Nicholson, seconded by Councilman Tungle. Is there any objections going to a work session? Hearing none. We are in a work session. 7:46. First item on our work session is a presentation for Marsh and McLean Agency, the city's insurance brokers. And at this time, I'll turn it over to city manager for introduction of these four individuals.
Well, thank you, Mayor and Council. Each year we have a visit from our insurance broker, Marsh and McLean, and like to extend my thank you to our staff, Debbie Zuger, who works with these folks in our risk program. These folks have been here and been our brokers for quite a long time. And tonight we have in front of us Mike Gordon, who's a principal, Roseanne Layden, she's our account management manager, and Cam Stone, a client executive. And they're going to make a presentation and answer any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening. So I'm going to get this rolling here. And I kind of made this chart because there's a lot of confusion sometimes. Who's the broker? Who is the insurance company? And so Bill has introduced our brokers. And so they're the team that brokers the insurance business for the city of Unalaska. They go out and get our insurance for us and try to get the prices down as much as possible. APEI, or Alaska Public Entity, who you guys are used to working with more, they're the insurance company. So the brokers work solely for the city. So they're kind of like, they have confidentiality. They're kind of like an attorney. So without further ado, go ahead. So the presentation highlights. We'll be talking about factors that affect premium costs. There are external and internal factors. We'll be talking about the FY25 insurance budget and renewal, cost lowering measures, and then the APEI AML JIA merger update. So external factors. And Mike will explain those to you.
Yeah, Deb has asked me to talk to you guys about the how insurance rates, how they're affected. And there's internal, she'll talk about, and there's external. These are externals. The carriers and the markets will look at risk assessment. They look at claim history, underwriter guidelines, actuarial analysis, market conditions, and world events and catastrophes. And that affects. And that affects the biggest parts of reinsurance for all these carriers and these pools. So anybody, any questions? Okay. I go to the next slide. Every year we go with Deb and the other staff, and we go over what we see in the market. And this is just an overview of what we see in rates. And this is broad. It's throughout Alaska and even through most of the country. And this year, commercial property, we're seeing 5 to 10% increases in rate. DIC follows that. It's a little higher. It's 10 to 15% increase now. Liabilities, 5 to 10%. Cyber, 5 to 15%. Well, I will tell you that cyber is softening a lot, and we're starting to see more flat, where a lot of our renewals now are coming in flat or very 1 or 2% higher. Workers' comp, this is 5 to 10% decrease. This is primarily, we talk about the state of Alaska. That's where most of our clients are at. And the state of Alaska reduced their rates this year, although those don't affect you in the pool because it's rated a little differently. We're seeing overall a decrease between 5 and 10% in rate. And in the marine, it's following the property. It's 5 to 10%. The rates are being the most important on here is reinsurance. And if you look down the last bullet point, reinsurance is common practice whereby insurance companies purchase insurance to cover claims. And when you have an insurance company or you have a pool, they're not paying the entire claim. And they go out and they purchase insurance that's called reinsurance to cover losses over a certain amount. And with API, I think it's $100,000, the first $100,000. And then they pay reinsurance to be able to cover after that, up to a certain limit. And to give you an idea how expensive that is in the part of the program, at APEI, it's 58% of every insurance dollar goes to reinsurance. So it really is a big effect. And that's nationally and globally, all over the world, reinsurance is just climbing like mad. It slowed down a little bit in the last, I'd say, 6 to 12 months. But all the indications are it's probably going to increase in the future. And so that's what drives rates the biggest is the reinsurance. Welcome questions on any of that.
Councilman Ruby.
Yeah, I was just curious. So we, you know, over the last few years, we have been seeing in increases in insurance. And so what seems to be the major driving factor of why it continues to keep going up year after year?
Right now, it's primarily reinsurance, which you don't have any control of. It's outside, it's the global. The idea is with insurance, you spread the risk over a large area of insureds. And so you're paying reinsurance for claims in Florida or California with the wildfires. All that drives it up. And then you also have, on a more micro, you can have rate increases driven by claims. The city's had some claim issues with work comp, and they've had some with employment practices. So those are taken in when they're underwriting, but the biggest one is reinsurance right now, and it's a real struggle.
So insurance rates are going up because of some other entities that claim for somebody and then somebody's happening on different part of the state or different state that every problem and claiming insurance and some other one are from the claim that's what raising the rate up is that
within the pool. You guys are in a pool. There's two pools. There's the API pool and the MLJI pool. And when you're in a pool, you share risk to a certain extent. And then your rates are based on your experience, your losses, the experience and losses of the pool as a whole. And then that reinsurance, which is the huge biggest part of it, is the claims and the losses that are spread all over globally. And a lot of the reinsurance is done out of London. And so these claims could be coming from everywhere, anywhere, any part of the world. And it drives up the capacity for reinsurance to provide reinsurance. It's getting more expensive.
So when you get insurance, you don't have a choice where the pool then goes. They just throw you in the pool where they put you in the pool where everybody else.
Yeah, with your pool.
Where you pick on that.
With your particular pool, they have a set of, they have multiple reinsurance companies that are involved, and they negotiate with them during each renewal cycle to get the reinsurance down as low as they can for the group as a whole. And that's what that sets the rates within that pool. And we're going to talk a little later about there's a API and EMLJ are going to be combining, or that's what they're trying to do. And we can talk a little bit about what the effect of that'll have.
Thank you.
So the brokers have discussed the external factors, the market rates. Those are things that we don't have a lot of control over, very little control. But we have internal factors, city-driven factors that affect our rates too. So one of them is increase or decrease in payroll. That number affects workers' compensation and general liability premiums. And another one is the increase or decrease in ports revenue affects our marine liability insurance. City assets. Every time we switch out our old cars for our new, or we get more cars, or we remodel, that affects our premiums. And also, as Mike mentioned, claims, our claims history affects our premium. And so with that being said, I'm going to go over our loss run report. Every quarter, APEI gives us a quarterly loss run, and it's a five-year history of our workers' comp and our general liability claims. And so I'm just going to go over that real quickly with you guys so you can see where we're at. Okay, so workers' compensation. So you can see the year, and you can see how many claims we had that year, and you can see how much the claims cost that year. And then, so we've had a total of 68 claims for a grand total of $883,830. And so currently, most of these claims are closed, but we still have three claims open that are incurring expenses. Okay. And so the next slide, so these are just some of the stats that we get quarterly.
Yeah.
And so the first box up on the top, it says the comparison of injury types by percent. So there are five categories of injuries: fall and slip, strut, cut, strain, and other WC injuries. And you can see how the city compares against the other members in the pool. And the main point to take from that is when you look across, we're all having about the same kind of percentage of injuries. We're not having any other egregious injuries that other members in the pool, that we're all having the same. And so the box below is the cost range comparison per $1,000. And you look at the year, and example for 1920, the city had $0 to $5,000 in claims, and other members had $5 to $10. Traditionally, we do better than most of the other members in the pool, but there are a couple of years you see where we did worse than other members in the pool. The bottom box is the city claims per year per injury type. So again, you have the five injury categories, the year, and how many of each kind of injuries occurred. And then the miscellaneous stats, timeliness, it just says that the city's pretty good about getting our stuff in on time. And the frequency, everybody's having about the same amount of injuries per million of payroll. And then the average cost of claims, it's pretty good. We're pretty close. So that's just how we where we stand and how we are comparing to other members in the APEI insurance pool. So this is liability. So the loss run has workers' comp and liability. And so what I did is I took the claims, and this is for a 5-year period of time, and we have automobile, crime, cyber, general, medical, and property. And you have the number of claims, what the city's paid, and what the total was. And so insurance has covered the difference in between there. So one noteworthy thing is that in the past 5 years, APEI has had 16 employment practices claims, and the city has been responsible of 6 of them. And we know we've been through the mill with the employment liability claims. So the bottom, this is a line of insurance that isn't with APEI. It's our marine liability. And so we have a claim in progress with the tiebreaker. Go ahead and change. Okay, so go ahead. So, Mike, did you want to talk about the budget a little bit?
I can a little bit, sure. The far right is the actual premiums for that particular cycle. And then we get together usually 90 to 120 days out, and we do what we call a renewal strategy meeting, and we try to give Deb the information of what we're seeing in the market and what we're getting information we're getting from the pool as far as what possible rate increases are. And so this year we gave her numbers, and she normally leans a little bit heavy on maybe on the higher end. When we say 5 to 10%, mm-hmm. She might use 7 or 8. And so these are the first column is the budgeted numbers, and we just got to deliver the actuals today. And they came in much, much better than what we expected. It was still higher than last year, mm-hmm. But it's still not bad.
Yeah, it was a pretty good renewal, better than I thought. And Mike's correct. When they give me a range, we budget conservatively. We are trying to budget in January and February for a market that doesn't even open until May or June. So it's way ahead of like having solid numbers. So it's a little bit of a guessing game. I have a little crystal ball on my desk, and we jokingly call the report they give me the crystal ball report, because it's pretty far in advance, but we're able to do a pretty good job, you know, of making a good educated guess. And I do budget on the high end of the percentage that they give us, just because we don't know. So,
but like a good example, though, go back to that, please. Like with the cyber liability, when we talked to her at that point in time, we were telling her there was going to be 20-25% increase, mm-hmm. because that's what the market was. And it turned out to be flat. The markets changed in that period of time. And the same thing with property. We probably told her property was much higher, and the property market has shifted. It's gone back up, down a little bit. So it's just the best guess we can make. It's
okay. So we have this expensive insurance, right? And so, of course, everybody wants to lower costs. And so, really, the city has very little control over the external factors, as Mike explained. We don't have a lot of control over that. What we do have control over are the internal factors that I pointed out in that section of the presentation. So basically, loss control equals prevention. So risk management employs layers of loss control measures to prevent accidents and incidences as much as possible. No one layer will provide adequate protection. So what you have to do is you have to layer loss control measures throughout the organization. And there are things like employee safety and professional training. There are some examples there. A safe and healthy work environment. And, you know, there are some examples there. Clear and consistent policies and practices, secure contracts and agreements, via clear, comprehensive terms and proper insurance protections. Transfer of contractual risk is a really big one. We want to transfer that risk to somebody else as much as possible, whenever possible. And that's what, if you ever wonder what I'm doing back in my office, I'm trying to figure out how to make somebody else take the risk. So Go ahead, Ms. Carlin. Use of liability reducing forms, you know, waivers and indemnifications, addressing issues promptly to, you know, so they don't blow up into bigger issues. Insurance is generally the last layer of loss control employed only when all the other layers have failed or they were not in place in the first place. So that's the first thing we can do. The second thing, we have to regularly assess, analyze, and adjust the loss control measures, the claims history. We have to analyze and see, you know, what's going on there. And then our insurance program to make sure we have the right coverage and the right pricing. And the third thing, use the resources available to us. So insurers offer premium discounts. We need to take advantage of those. They offer free, insurers and brokers offer other programs and resources. We need to train employees to train other employees in-house and have departments consolidate training to bring in one trainer, you know, like for a Haz Walker, instead of them each bringing in their own trainer, have them consolidate training. So go ahead. Okay, Mike, did you want to talk?
Sure. This is the timeline here. We just had a meeting with all the members of API and AMLJ that wanted to participate. And back in December, they started this. They formed a committee. It's made up of members from both pools. And it's not an old idea. It's an old idea that they just brought to the surface. And so then it's gotten very serious. And if I had to give it a percentage, it's probably about 80% sure that it's probably going to go through. And some of the things that I'm going through this looking here, there are a few new pools B, provide better value. These member-oriented and member-governed, transparent, structured to manage the cost of risk, broad value. What they're really talking about here is their economy of scale. And it's kind of interesting because the economy of scale is the more dollars in premium they have, the more power they have with reinsurance because they've got a bigger pool. So they're going to literally double the size of the dollars they've got, and they can use that in the reinsurance market. The other part that will also affect the reinsurance market and also their claims that they retain is by combining the two is they're going to spread the risk even thinner throughout the entire state of Alaska so that one area, like here in Alaska, the school district and the city are in the same program. But when they're one bit, it becomes a bigger program, that's going to spread the risk even more thinly throughout the entire state. And that's a good thing. So if you have a catastrophe loss and say on Alaska now, and the school district and the city are affected, then that's going to affect API much more than it would if they were there was a bigger pool. So those are the positives. Now, the negatives, I don't know. We've always used the pools of brokers against each other and negotiated to drive rates down. And so that goes away. And so I'm not sure how that's going to play out. They claim that they're a nonprofit and they're going to try to keep the rates down as low as possible. But from my perspective, it's still I leverage against each other, and that's going to go away. So I don't know how that's going to play out.
So the update, they had a schedule. We just had a meeting. It was a webinar type meeting, Zoom meeting. So here's the upcoming schedule for that consolidation. So from June to October, the newly formed committee, they're going to finalize details and they're going of the consolidation and they're going to present it to the APEI board and the AMLJIA boards. And so the boards are going to be looking at that. And if the recommendation is approved by both of the insurance pool boards and, you know, the two pools that exist in Alaska, then the information will be passed on to the members and we're the member. And then sometime in November, there'll be a vote, and if approved by renewal next year, API and AMLJIA won't exist any longer, and it'll be the one group. And the shortened version is APRA. I can't remember what that stands for, sorry. But there would just be one pool. So,
and the key to that is the members that are in both will each have one vote.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've got to take, it's got to be a 2/3 vote for it to succeed. And from my perspective, that's probably going to be the biggest possibility where it would fail is to get the 2/3 vote. If they don't, if the members don't really understand what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. So that's really all we have for you tonight. If you have any questions, go ahead and ask. And, you know, you have the written version of the PowerPoint presentation. And that's what we have for you. And renewal's just about right. We just get to pay now. Just get the bill.
Okay, thanks, Councilman Tuggle.
So if that whole consolidation will be passed, is that going to lower the premium? Is that going to change the...
It should lower the rates.
Rate,
it should. That's the goal.
That's okay.
With the economy of scale. And it should also improve the services. I'll give you an example. AMLJ has a much better police liability program for safety loss control than APEI does. When they combine together, now they're taking all the good pieces of both and bring them together with services. And besides the reinsurance and all that, having better safety and loss control lowers claims and lowers claims costs and lower rates in the big picture. So that's the goal of what they're trying to do is, yes, get the rates so the premiums aren't rising as fast as they are.
So if they tried to consolidate this goal in the previous did they try it or it did not?
They've never gotten this far from my
work. Okay, so
we're in the 11th hour right now of this going through, and they've tried it in the past, but it's never happened.
So there's a good possibility.
There's a good possibility.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Councilman Bell?
So with the timeline for this merger, probably wouldn't see any kind of effect on rates until probably 2026. Would that be correct? Or?
Let's see. We're just
25 would be
25. It's going to be July 1 of next summer. Okay. Is when this due. We'll see the full effect of it.
Okay.
Then.
And I just want to say, I've met many the people from Marsh McLennan, including people present here, and I think they've done a good job for the city over the years, and I appreciate you guys coming out and presenting in front of us. So, thank you.
We appreciate you guys having us.
Yep. Thank you, Councilman Bell. Anyone else? Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your coming out here and working with the city, and our whole goal is get lower costs for our business out here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item B under this work session is the legislative update from State Lobbyist Diane Bloomer.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Online with us via Zoom tonight is our State Lobbyist Diane Bloomer, and she's happy to be here and give us her update. Diane?
Hi, thank you, Bill. Good evening, Mayor, City Council members. Just want to let you know that I apologize for not having a PowerPoint prepared. There was a little bit of confusion in the dates that I was presenting, so I apologize for that, and I'm happy to provide something in follow-up if need be. So I'll be a little bit brief tonight, but I'm happy to answer as many questions as possible or put together something on any bill that you would like more information on. So as you know, I'll just jump into it unless there's any questions. The legislative session with the state ended on the deadline, the 121st day, at midnight for the Senate, but it went into overtime with the House. And there's some questions right now about the bills that passed after midnight. I don't think many of them would impact the city of Onalaska much. The city of Seward and some others could be impacted immensely if they determine that those bills are actually the overtime was not a legal action. So typically at midnight, they have to signy die, but they passed five bills that they were trying to rush through. And now if they're contested, there could be legality issues with those particular bills. And they would, in order to pass them, they would have to call themselves back into session with a majority vote of the both bodies and get those bills repassed legitimately. So anyway, overall, there was about 62 bills passed this session. 40 of them were passed on the last day. And so that's what a chaotic whirlwind it was. And it took a while, and we're still working through some of the processes, because many of those bills got loaded up with other bills. And we call that Christmas train, or they have all kinds of names for that kind of a process. But at the last minute, things get stuffed into other bills. So with AML and others, we've been working to make sure that we are able to identify all of the things that would impact local governments. The operating budget passed with 174.4 million BSA increase, up to 680 per student, 73 million in the operating budget for pupil transportation. There was about 5.2 million for K to third grade reading focus. That was one of the governor's focuses. They actually did fund the full community assistance for $30 million. They ensured that $30 million was put back into the fund so that the full community assistance could be paid out. There was $914.3 million put aside for permanent dividend funds. So the permanent dividend fund in total will be $1,655. And that includes a several hundred dollar energy rebate. And if you recall last year, at the end of session, they said that if the price of oil went above a marker that they set last year, they'd have this like waterfall criteria, and a certain percentage of that excess revenue would then go towards an energy rebate. And so that's that, coupled with the PFD that was put aside, will pay each and every Alaskan $1,655 in October. $502 million went in for the Head Start matches. I'm going to rewind for just a second. The education was a huge issue. You probably saw it in the news and heard about it when you talked to people from Juneau. Education, energy, and then obviously the PFD and the budget were the big tickets this year. So Head Start got $5.2 million. There was a lot of focus too on childcare, just based on workforce development issues. So $7.5 million for grants to get childcare providers, seed money funding to be able to open up or restart after the pandemic childcare facilities so that people can have that childcare coverage while they go to work. There was also $1.5 million for senior disability grants. And I think $1.3 million for hiring of highway and aviation staff. I don't think that really will impact the city of Unalaska at this point, but hopefully the city manager and I can continue to work on some aviation ideas with DOT over the next year. In the capital budget, there was $68 million for deferred maintenance, mostly for the university, some for K-12. $30 million for professional housing and weatherization, which I think is something worth looking at for you folks as well. $8 million for DOT harbor funds. And then there was $75 million for infrastructure projects around the state. But for Unalaska, the really good news this year was Captain's Bay Road, which we've been working on for quite some time, as you can all recall, was awarded funds from as a community project award. So while the amount, $334 million, doesn't seem like a lot, let me get that back to you in just a second. But the funding that came from the state will match the funding that comes from the federal government. So it's the match that the state would put in to receive the funds from the federal government. So, and we're still working on some of those issues with DOT. Let's see, the A couple others that we might mention out of the capital budget. There was a lot of focus on energy, housing, and infrastructure. So SB 186 is on the governor's desk now. And a few of the things that are in there, $13 million for rural bulk fuel tanks, farm upgrades, powerhouse upgrades. And I'm not sure, I haven't had the time to dive into those to actually see if those are upgrades that we would be entitled to. One of the things I think that'll benefit Onalaska a lot is the $1.0 billion for rural broadband development grants and the $15 million for broadband development in addition to that. So broadband really got a lot of attention this year. Let's see, also for the city of Onalaska, $115.9 million for the testamina replacement. And it was in two appropriations. So I think that's a real positive for the city as well. That probably wraps up most of the things that I would identify in the operating and capital budget, but I would like to talk about a couple of bills that do impact the that do or could impact the municipality, in addition to some of the bills that passed that are statewide issues. So one of the bills would be SB 179, and it relates to municipal property tax. The assessment of property tax sets out some certification criteria for assessors, and it prohibits the municipalities from levying a tax on the transfer of real property. And we're not completely certain what that looks like at this point. So we're working through some of these bills with the Department of Commerce because they're working up the regulatory process. But with the assessors component of this bill, I think it's important to say that this bill directs the governing body, meaning the city council, to appoint one or more boards of equalization for hearing for an appeal for the determination of an assessor. And it prohibits the Board of Equalization from raising the property tax within the current year unless requested to do so by the appellant. So there's all kinds of criteria that is set forth in this bill that could impact the appraisal process in local government settings. A couple other bills that may be of interest to you that passed are... Well, HB 50 passed, which is was the governor's carbon sequestration credit. And they're still working through the regulatory process for that particular bill. House Bill 196 was a little bill, but it could be a big thing for employers who drug test employees. It allows for using the swab process as opposed to the more intrusive type methods. So those would be accepted as a legitimate form of drug testing. Let's see, we were able to discourage some bills that were on the move that could have impacted all of us in a somewhat negative way. We thought there was a bill relating to voluntary compliance officers, which would allow folks to go onto job sites and just have them open their books. There was a request to repeal the Workers' Compensation Commission that was not actually passed. And then also there was a bill passed that had quite a few workers' comp issues that we're still kind of weeding through. It has some re-employment rights and benefits. It has compensation for an employee to stay at work program. It has compensation benefits for the guarantee fund. And then the one I think that we really need to pay attention to is the presumption of compensability for workers' compensation claims related to post-traumatic stress disorder. So we'll be working through some of these and I'll notify Bill as the regulations develop to see what kind of impacts they would have on any workers' comp claims that the city would have as well. I think that's about all the bills, and I don't want to take a whole lot of your time. Like I said in the beginning, I'm happy to answer any questions that I can at this point or provide written follow-up for any of the bills that you have concerns about. I do want to also articulate a little bit more what Bill said. When I was talking to Representative Edgman and Senator Hoffman, he wasn't going to be able to make the fly-in in the end of July that we were talking about. And we talked a little bit about all of the House members being up for election and that there were a few tough races. We'll probably have Representative Edgman back, I would guess. But there were some others that are in pretty tough races who are in positions of influence, for instance, transportation chairs or in finance positions that would be people we would normally invite out to Onalaska to show what's happening out there and kind of show what our needs are out there. And I think that's been extremely beneficial with our fly-ins. I think that helped us a lot with Captain's Bay Road and the funding for that project. So I think that the fly-ins are very, very beneficial. But I also recognize what Representative Edgman and I talked about, and that was we could be flying people out and spending the money and they won't even be in office next year. So I talked to Bill at that point and we decided that maybe we come up with a new idea. We used to have a reception in Juneau as opposed to a fly out to Onalaska. But I actually think the flyouts are a little more beneficial, and maybe we alternate and only do the flyouts on non-election years. So we make sure that we're targeting the people who are actually going to be in office. So I just didn't want you to think that we decided we just didn't have time to do the fly-in. Anyway, happy to answer any questions for you guys. I usually come out in the fall and give a presentation. So I apologize that I'm not there. Like I said, there was a kind of a crosswire in the timing of the presentation. So I'm happy to provide more information on anything you need.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Appreciate the update. And I know that it's been hectic down there and they're still trying to sort it out with the many bills that passed after the timeline. So we'll keep in touch and get updates from you for the council. Any questions from the council? Councilman Coleman?
Yes, thank you. So the governor, I think, still has opportunity to line item veto. Do you see anything of consequence that would be on the chopping block now?
Thank you for asking that question. Just as I wrapped up, I saw my note that said to let you guys know that the legislature had yesterday around 11 a.m. passed the budget finally over to the governor. He has 20 days minus Sundays. To veto, sign, approve, whatever, do whatever he's going to do with the budget bill. Sherry, that's a really good question. Councilwoman, I'm sorry. I don't know. I know that there's some issues that he had on a couple of topics, and there's a lot of people holding their breath on the education components to see what may happen. I don't think he's going to redline any community projects necessarily. I think those will probably stand in the capital budget. But there could be some redline through some education funding and maybe a couple other smaller areas that he maybe didn't get on board with. So I don't see major ones for us unless the education one impacts us immensely.
Okay, thank you.
I'm hopeful there's none.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions for Dan? No? Okay. Well, thank you, Dan. Appreciate that. And we were looking forward for an update sometime in August, possibly.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you a lot. Okay. Next item is the ordinance 2024-10. Creating a budget amendment number 8 to the fiscal year 2024 budget appropriating $1,191,406 from the 1% sales tax fund for an increase to the Captain's Bay Road Waterline Extension Project WA22D. I'll turn this over to City Manager for introduction and Council discussion.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. So as you know, we recently passed the budget amendment to appropriate $4.9 million for this project. And we had bids, we had a bid come in, and it's outlined in the report options that we have. There's basically four alternatives, and pass this amendment to account for basically the just over $1 million in the bid, which also includes, I believe, the additional money in case there other expenses come up, and then, or we can reduce the scope of the project, choose not to award the bid, or cancel the project. So I'm happy to answer any questions about this budget amendment. Say 4 points.
Done. Okay. Any council questions or comments? All right. Yeah, Councilman Bell.
We're to put this back out to bid. Is there potential that there might be other companies that bid on it, or are we going to be back to the same bidder?
You never know. I mean, I'm surprised we only had one bidder, and I don't know if Mr. Brown would like to speak to that. I know that I believe we took questions from different potential bidders, but we only received one at the time that it was received. And I don't believe we received any late, as if it happened to be postmarked the next day. So I'm not really certain that if we did it again, what the result would be. But of course, I suppose that is an option.
And that bid covered the original scope of work that was put out. There was no additional that came back and said, if you've got to do this, you need to do this, and would increase the cost. Or
if I recall, it really came down to the material cost per lineal foot. Came in a lot higher. It was like $100, I think. And I must have said something wrong because Mr. Brown jumped up immediately. So I'm going to ask him to come down and correct me if I said something wrong.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council, Mr. Homka. It actually came down to labor. Our engineer's report and cost estimate and the bid, when we went through it all, materials were pretty close to what we thought they would be, where the additional cost was mostly in per foot on installing the project. So, and that was something the engineer didn't have a, excuse me, a good feel on what the market is today after all the COVID and everything else that happened. But that's what really changed the cost. And just want to point out that $827,500 will be contingency that we had to add to keep our 15% contingency. So that's a big chunk that we'll hope will be returning. And that's just for unforeseen issues that come up during the project.
Thank you, Scott.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate that. Labor cost was your primary issue then?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
All right, thanks. Councilman Coleman?
How much is available in the 1% fund that's available?
Last I looked, there was plenty even after that amendment. But I'd have to check to see what the exact amount is.
And
I will get that to you.
Okay. And I guess, yeah, I mean, since it's a work session, and I guess the second part of that is for FY24, our total revenues from sale. And then, I mean, because of our total revenue for sale, the 1% from that, how much of that is encumbered? So is like, is this going to be able to come out of this current budget revenues overage, or is this coming out of possibly what we have in holdings? Does that make sense
to you?
Not
the first part of the question.
So I'm just curious of our, this past revenue source for sales tax, the 1%, how much of the 1% has been encumbered? And then, and is, would, how much is this would be available for the, just this current year? Would it be enough to cover this particular amount?
I will get that to you.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Luby.
Yeah, I'd just make a suggestion whenever we're talking about using a fund balance to appropriate. If we could just have a balance, that would be great.
Okay, thank you. I think we have to explain a little bit more about what's happened here, a little bit of, because for some reason I was thinking this water was coming right out of the pipeline coming from the dam. But the only reason we don't fill up that number one tank is because the gravity flow causes it to never get full. In other words, the pipe is higher than the tank, then drops down, then it comes back as again as being higher than the tank, it stops. And the other issue is... 12 million gallons? 12 million gallons of water is that by month or by year?
It's about 8 billion, close to 8 billion gallons a month. The way it's...
6 million?
So out of that, pretty much 10 million, out of the 10 million, 20% is being used. So that 8 million is going to the ground. We don't know it's, and we don't see it, and won't be long till that pipeline will stop. Will stop flowing water the way it's going, and we have no idea where it's gonna go, because it can be under the creek, it's under the mountain, but it's getting worse and worse. So I've been in the council for the 12 years. I never really bring this up pretty much, but I've been dealing the last 4 years. We've been dealing and losing it every year on a monthly basis. Millions of gallons is being wasted, treated water being wasted, going somewhere where we can't find a lick where it's going. So this might be a compliment on me, but this is something I seen that the worst of that pipe is just not getting any better. No matter how much repair it's been done, it's just finding its way out somewhere else. And it's a matter of time where it's going to stop flowing and it's just going to be dumping underneath in there somewhere.
Hey, thank you. I agree with you. Yeah. Water that's been running through our system, a chlorination plant and everything else that we'd spent millions of dollars is, you're looking at millions of gallons of water that we're losing. And at one point, about 4 or 5 years ago, we started running out of water in the reservoir. And it's crazy. But we could have that happen again with, climate change and heat, which doesn't seem like that's happening here, which we haven't seen much as far as sun yet. But I do support this additional funding. Let's get this, the city needs to get this water line fixed or shut it off. We don't want to shut it off. We have customers out there right now using that system. And we got two other customers waiting in line if we get it going. So I think that's a good positive thing for us to look forward to. Anything else? Comments? Councilman Luby.
So it doesn't surprise me that it's labor costs that's driving the extra money. I mean, we all know that with the rise in all the costs that's happened, everybody, a lot of businesses have had to give their employees raises and, you know, to keep up with everything. So doesn't surprise me. And, you know, this drives the insurance rates up, just like we just heard. You know, there's a lot of different things that go into play with that. So I'll support it. Yeah, I don't have a problem with, you know, approving it. As long as we have the money and the fund balance, we'll be good. Thanks.
Thank you. Councilman Nicholson?
Yes, I will be in support of this ordinance as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Nicholson. Any further comments before we move on? Hearing none, we'll move on. Let's see. Next item is item D, which is vicious dogs complaint. I'll turn this over to city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. And tonight we do have a matter in front of you concerning vicious dogs and our efforts to try and deal with a situation that we are all well aware of. At this point in time, we have one of our city attorneys on the line that can help address what exactly we're proposing to do. And of course, the police chief Hankins is here as well to answer any questions. Is it Sam?
Yep.
Sam Severin is our attorney. And Sam, would you like to go ahead and brief the council on your approach, please?
Sure. Yes, I'd be glad to. I think the history of the issue, many of you are probably more familiar with it than I am, but it's largely laid out in that draft complaint. There were attacks in at least October and April. The April 1, a person was injured while trying to break it up. The city has done largely what it can by issuing a vicious dog determination, making efforts to serve that, which was not easy, as well as writing citations. And then one of the challenges has been that the dogs, just as a practical matter, it's challenging to impound them. It's unsafe to do so, or has been thus far. So the chief and I have been talking for about a month or so about what can we do. And a couple of options. One is longer term to change the code. There are some things that could be done that would probably make it easier to handle this kind of situation in the future. But right now, my proposal was we could bring a suit, which is before you in draft form, to ask a court to intervene. I do this not so much in the dog context, but with quite a bit of frequency in various code enforcement matters when the city has tried what it can do and it's just the person just isn't cooperating or it's just not enough of a hammer. We can ask a judge to intervene. The judge could order, it's largely injunctive relief, encompasses many things. I mean, we could, at a basic level, a court order saying restrain the dogs, failure to do so will be contempt. It's no longer a citation. Now we're going right back before the judge. Or the judge could do something like, the judge could order destruction of the animals. The local veterinarian is supportive of that and believes that is necessary. Whether a judge would necessarily order that, I don't know. But we could ask for that. We would ask for full fees. It's basically a way to get a judge to uphold the code. What I like about these is many things, but one, a lot of times if the city takes action, if we were to impound the animals, then the person has a right to a hearing. They might raise questions about whether that's necessary. This bakes in all those arguments at the upfront stage in front of a judge. So you sort of get the due process and all the arguments upfront in front of a judge. So it's not a city board or something. You just get a court order. And then you're not sort of acting first and dealing with appeals and whatnot afterward, put it all on the judge's plate and just get a court order authorizing whatever the judge thinks is appropriate. So that is, in a nutshell, where we are now. Later in the agenda, there is a resolution authorizing the suit, but this is probably a better time to talk in a more general sense about whether to go forward or ask questions about this or the situation in general, I suppose.
Okay, thank you. Bill, city manager, well, chief, or somebody goes.
Chief, would you like to speak to where we're at?
Thank you, Mayor and Council. The only thing I'd like to bring up is that the ordinance doesn't cover a lot of this at this stage. When dogs are at large, it's one thing. When they have been recovered by the owner, it's a different story. Here we have two separate attacks by these three dogs. On the first attack, the owner was issued a letter from me indicating that his dogs were deemed vicious. They could not be off his property without being on a leash and muzzled. And then in April, we have an attack where a dog was actually killed by these animals. Same thing. They were not leashed. They were not muzzled. They were not able to be controlled by command. As far as I know, I know the dogs are still on the island. I know they're still at the house. Summer's coming, and sooner or later, somebody's going to want to take dogs out. We could be right back in the same thing, or worse, because the owner of the second dog that was attacked while trying to protect his dog was also bitten by these three dogs. This is a very serious matter. As you heard at a most recent council session, there was a petition that went around at the library that people can come in and sign. I've personally had phone calls from people that say, I don't go on trails anymore because people let their dogs run wild. That I'm not here for that tonight. I'm just here to say this is a concern by people in the community, especially on those three animals.
Okay, thank you, Chief. Okay, now we'll have council discussion. Anyone wishing to speak to the issue, to the resolution coming up? Huntsman Coleman.
I hope this is not getting off track, but in the second attack, since a dog bit a human, what's the general rule on confinement because of rabies, or if they show proof they have a vaccine? So did that come into play, and why you couldn't detain the dogs or pin them for the amount of time?
The ordinance allows for two remedies there. One, that the dogs are taken, or one, that they are confined at the owner's residence.
Okay.
So I opted for the at owner's residence. At the time that we were there, I had two officers there. Our newest officer, Officer Hilling, got out of the car to let the dog owner know, who was walking up to the officers, just hang on, we've got these citations, we'll be right with you. And the dogs were growling at her, so we knew there was going to be a confrontation with the animals that was not going to end up in a good situation. But they were already in his custody, so I elected to allow him by ordinance to keep them at home. Since then, no one has seen the dogs. To answer your question, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? Councilman Luby?
Yeah, I think in general, we're kind of getting overrun by dogs on the island. And, well, you know, there's a lot of responsible pet owners, but there's also a few that are not. And, you know, we might need to look a little further at some of it with some of these dogs. But I think what happened was horrible. And, you know, and I worry about children. That's my biggest fear. I mean, yes, a dog is like your child, and I really feel for Rachel and Levi and what happened to them, you know, but could we imagine if this was a child, what would it, you know, it would be a whole different story right now. And so I think we, you know, seriously need to, you know, maybe look broader too, but I would be in support of this.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I I've had many dogs over a period of time in my life. Two of them ended up biting me. And so I had to get rid of them. We didn't have a sheriff. We didn't have a police officer at the time. It was an individual family had to take care of their dogs. And so I understand what that means to a family. But if a dog is running loose, especially around downtown park, I see dogs in there all the time. I'm concerned that, you know, I don't know the dogs. I don't know who they belong to. But I do know they scramble around and fight and argue amongst themselves. And the kids get in the middle of them. And we may have a problem down there with them, too, this summer. But last summer, it was kind of like four or five dogs in there with about 10 or 12 kids. That's scary. Parents are sitting off. They're there, but, you know, they're not in control of their dog a lot of times. It's just, they just run around. I just kind of worried that we might have a problem. I hope not, but it's unfortunate that this happened. But the being a big dog, they're, from what it seems, I see here, I wasn't here when it happened, but I heard about it. I was in the traveling at the time. So in a way, I'm kind of glad that we have some kind of way to address dogs running loose. I don't know what OC is going to plan to do in regards to having them run amok in Summers Bay, other areas where people are going to go for holiday picnics or whatever. But we need to work with the police department, and hopefully we get some resolve with that issue. Or if somebody gets hurt. Councilman Bell?
Yeah, quick question to the chief. If the dogs haven't been seen in a while, are they still on the island? I just want to say real quickly, I'm in support of the resolution. But if, you know, the problem, the remedy, or if the dogs have been removed from the island or other means, you know, do we need to follow through with the suit? Yeah.
That was a question of mine. And when our ACO got back into town, I asked him and an officer to go because we had not gotten the rabies tags yet. So go to the house, get a copy of the rabies tags. And at that time, we found out the dogs were still there. And then the rabies tags came in later that evening.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and I think there was mentioned in some of the summary here that there may be some code changes that we need to look at down the road, and I would hope that we would take care of that in the near future, or at least look at what we need to change. So, thank you.
Yeah, good point, Councilman Bell. Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you, Chief. I'll request a motion and a second to return to a regular session.
Move to go back into regular session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Tungle. When we finish our vote. Okay. Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Tungle. There's any objection? Hearing none, we will take a break here for a couple, 3 minutes, and then come back to our regular agenda. Call the meeting back to order. And we're on item number 13, we're now on the regular agenda. Persons wishing to speak on the regular agenda item must sign up with the city clerk. Have we had anyone sign up?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Well, first item is A, 13A, Ordinance 2024-08, second reading, adopting the fiscal year 2025 operating and capital budget. May I have a motion and a second to adopt Ordinance 2024-08?
I'll make a motion to adopt Ordinance 2024-08.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Luby, second by Councilman Coleman to adopt Ordinance 2024-08. Turn this over to the city manager for introductions.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. So before you tonight is what represents a lengthy process, obviously, and it's here for your review and adoption of this ordinance. There were a couple of things that we discovered as we were going through. Obviously, one of the interesting things I'll say is someone had a spreadsheet upstairs, and they somehow it got entwined and double counted. So even spreadsheets on our end have a fun history. So actually, we were over the amount, and it comes to, I think, when we were combining the positions at the powerhouse or the two maintenance, and it happened to hit all of the accounts. So we've done an amendment to that. And if you'd like, I can point out a couple of other things that we have done since the first reading. That we corrected the entry error for the maintenance mechanic position and facilities maintenance. I say it hit a lot of funds because it's allocated to the general fund, electric, water, waste, all of the proprietary funds. So all of those had to be reduced accordingly. We reduced the health insurance amounts for the additional fire and powerhouse positions that were added. At the time, it showed the impact of we were working off a higher estimate, and that per person amount was reduced. So the changes have been made to all of those accounts. It's basically changed from $36,000 to $35,000. And then we were dealing with a line item transfer, I think, for the housing fund that resulted in a higher appropriated amount from the first reading, and that has been corrected. It looked as if it was the time when we were talking about the subsidy last year. We were doing that work to help create, you know, we were holding all those units for positions, and you all approved a subsidy. So that has been corrected. And the personnel detail was about $58 off. So the budget is basically $32,232,392. Can go through anything else that I hope to ask or hope to answer if you have questions. Batting about a 200 tonight.
Okay. Councilman Coleman.
Yeah, I think thank you for the explanation on changes. It would be great that if something high resolution as a budget, if you just put that in the memo, I like those for the next meeting, then we can save and look at those right away. So that would be appreciated if you just would update the memo.
Sure.
So we'd have that available. Thank you.
Anyone else? Councilman Toby.
I don't want to disappoint. No. No, I just want to actually say, I thought you guys did a great job. It was a big task with all of the increase in expenses and everything that we had and adding, you know, new employees, and there was a lot. And I really didn't think you guys could pull it off, but I was very pleasantly surprised that you did. And I'm actually really proud of everybody for making it happen. So I just wanted to say thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And that's really the staff. Obviously, they do their best to keep me advised and informed, but they do that kind of work to make sure it all adds up. So I'm very thankful for what they do.
Okay, thank you. Okay, no hearing, no further comments. City Clerk, is anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up.
Hearing no public comments at this time, I request a roll call vote, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Thank you. On a roll call vote of 5-0, the council has adopted ordinance 2024-08. Next item B, ordinance 2024-09, amending the fee schedule, specifying the fees and charges for services, labor, and equipment provided by the city effective July 1st, 2024. May I have a motion and a second to introduce ordinance 2024-09 and schedule it for public hearing and second reading on June 25th, 2024.
I move to introduce ordinance 2024-09 and schedule it for public hearing second reading on June 25th, 2024.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Tungo. On ordinance 2024-09, I'll turn this over to the city manager.
The fee schedule. Thank you. there's been several, I should say several, amendments since, and trying to get to my comments, excuse me. No changes had been proposed for the citywide general fees, the clerk's department, public works, utilities reports. There were a few fees that were posing some differences. One of them is from fire and EMS. You'll see planning and public safety. Those are the three departments that had some, excuse me, a little birdie in my ear over here. And I glossed over PCR, I apologize. Those are the, I think, four departments that proposed fee changes.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Let's see, council discussion at this time on ordinance 2409. Hearing none. City clerk, is anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up for this one.
Okay, thank you. At this time, I'll request a roll call vote on ordinance 2409.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. On a roll call vote of 5-0, ordinance 2024-09 is scheduled for a public hearing and second reading on June 25th, 2024. Next item, ordinance 2024-10, creating a budget amendment number 8 to the fiscal year 2024 budget, appropriating $1,192,406 from the 1% sales tax fund for an increase to the Captain's Bay Road Waterline Extension Project, WA22D. May I have a motion and a second to introduce ordinance 2024-10 and schedule it for a public hearing and second reading on June 25th, 2024.
Move to introduce ordinance 2024-10 and schedule it for public hearing and second reading on June 25th, 2024. Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Luby. I'll turn this over to the city manager.
Yes, and I think we will get the balance of the 1% fund for you, and I'm sorry, I didn't even think to look at that. It should be in there. So we'll make sure that as we're doing these budget amendments, we will put the balance in there of what accounts we're talking about. So a point well taken. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Bell?
Yeah, I just had a quick question, and maybe I missed it in the memo. If this bid's awarded, the one we do have, what's the timeline on completing this project?
I'm going to defer to Mr. Brown.
I believe we specified 160 days, or 6 months. The issue is supplies. We're not sure if they're going to be able to get the materials in time to complete the project for this summer. We're really pushing them to at least get to the Crowley area, North Pacific Fuel area, and try to at least get that portion done this year. So that's part of making sure this amendment moves forward so that we can get those ordered.
Okay. Hey, yeah, that's great. If there's any way to make it possible so that it's completed by next A season, that would be great. So, thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any further questions, comments, discussion? City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up for this.
Thank you. With that, I'll request a roll call vote, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Thank you. On a roll call vote of 5-0, with this vote, the council has introduced Ordinance 2024-10 and scheduled it for public hearing second reading on June 25th, 2024. Next item, Resolution 2024-22, authorizing a city manager to sign the FY25 Community Schools Agreement between the City of Unalaska and the Unalaska City School District. We have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2024-22.
Move to adopt Resolution 2024-22.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, seconded by Councilman Tungle. I'll turn this over to the city manager at this time.
Thank you. I just want to say that Mr. Brown and I both met with Superintendent Hanisch to go over the community schools agreement and make this year's corrections to what the amounts are, how we're working. We're also, separate and aside from this, looking at the hatcheries agreement, which hasn't been looked at in a long time. So the document in front of you represents our work together.
Okay, thank you. The council discussion or questions? Okay, Councilman Coleman.
I had concerns about it the last time. I think I was schooled pretty well on why it was up and needed to be increased, so I'll support this one.
Okay, thank you. City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up.
With that said, I'll request a roll call vote, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Thank you. On a roll call vote of 5-0. And with this vote, the council has adopted Resolution 2024-22. Next item E, Resolution 2024-23, authorizing the city manager to enter into agreement with PND engineers for the land surveying, environmental permitting, design engineering, or design of build float system for upland development in the amount of $856,000. They have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2024-23.
I move to adopt Resolution 2024-23.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungle, seconded by Councilman Nicholson. I'll turn this over to the city manager, please.
Thank you. I think on the report, I think it's package page 168, you can see the scope of work, which goes into detail on the project that we're looking at. And I think this is one that I know since I've been here that Ports has been had in there as a priority. The city's had it as a priority, and I'm happy to see it get to this point. And, of course, Ports Director Peggy McLaughlin is in the audience if you have any questions.
Okay. Any questions, comments, Councilman Coleman?
I kind of have a question, and you probably said it in here, but about design build plans for the upper lands. You've got the for the moorage and the floats, and then the civil works. Is that what that's referring to? So I'm referring to the land improvements. Is that already, is that what that section's called?
Yes, yeah, so there will be a certain amount of fill, and by code we'll be having to plumb in a restroom there. So, and we'll be creating parking. So the civil works we want to have designed to 100%. The design bid build for the float systems, the floats are kind of a plug and play. We've given them the specs of what we want for the floats, and that'll go out to bid, and the final design of where the raceways go and some of those kind of things will be included in the design build process. But the design for the uplands, we'll get all the permitting and all that design 100%.
And the land agreement swap with the other property owners? Is
that will be secured. It's verbal discussion, but before the permitting can happen, we'll have to have the agreement in place with the other lender. It's not as cumbersome as with the state of Alaska for the submerged tidelands.
And quick question on these upland improvements. I'll be curious, like, if we need to reduce costs, you know, where that possibly could come from. Although I know this is just design, the restroom, is that a requirement for a municipal port facility?
It's not a requirement for municipal port facility, but we have chosen through the years to put outhouses there, and that violates our own code. Our own code said if you're within a certain distance of sewer and water, you have to plumb into sewer and water.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. And further questions, Councilman Tungle?
We had a design, I don't know how many years ago, when we first started, I know we went through with a C float, but we got a design for A and B float at the same time by that time. And are we basing some of those design together with the design they're going to work on this?
When we originally started looking at taking care of Bobby Stores, we had received a part of the Harbor Matching Grant program for that. It was $3.5 million. The project itself was $3.5 million. It was not enough to cover the cost of A and B and C float. C float was in the worst repair at that point, much like we're doing with A and B float. Now we were decommissioning fingers on the floats. And we fully designed C float because of the direction of the wind in there. And chose a style of float system that we wanted. At the same time, we had P&D do the design, the scoping of the layout for A and B float with kind of bid numbers associating with the different styles of floats that we could get at the time. So there was an estimate associated with that design concept, but A and B floats were not fully designed. The layout was designed. That was scoped. There was geotech work done where all the subsurface drilling and measurements of that's all been done. So we know where to place the piles. And that's primarily what we're asking P&D to do with this design, is to use the geotech work that they've gotten to choose where the pile placement needs to go in concert with this layout. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, yeah. Plus, I know the design is kind of interfering with the other dock across from where Wallace used to be by Pike Steve.
Yes, some of the early designs or early layout concepts did have some potential interference with some plans at the time for that dock. That's no longer an issue.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions on Councilman Luby?
Yeah, I was just curious I just noticed the fish cleaning stations, one right at the bottom of the gangway and the other one at the end of that float. They're being moved in closer versus on the end. Is that right?
We might have a merged. Oh, I see. I think those were potential sites for it. The ideal, I think, would be on the outside of kind of similar to where it is now.
Uh-huh.
But
okay,
I was. They were giving us a couple of options, and one of the options didn't get taken off. There'll be one fishy laying station.
I just kind of know, I'm like, oh, wait a minute, that might be a problem.
We're going to be sandwiched by stank. Yeah.
No, yeah. Not going to happen. not this. I was worried more about the birds and trying to go down. Thanks.
Sorry about that.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions or comments? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see. Okay. City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up for this.
Okay, thank you. With that, I'll request a roll call vote.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Goldman?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Thank you. On a roll call vote of 5 yeas, 0 nays, with this vote, the council has adopted Resolution 2024-23. Next item is Item 13F, Resolution 2024-24, authorizing the city attorney to file a lawsuit to enforce the Animal Control Code. I have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2024-24.
I'll make a resolution to adopt Resolution 2024-24.
Second the motion.
Moved by Councilman Luby, seconded by Councilman Coleman. I'll turn this over to the city manager for introduction.
I think that's been discussed pretty well this evening and what we're here to do and talk about this. And we're looking for support of council to direct our attorney on what to do. So.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any council discussion at this time regarding Resolution 2024-24? City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up.
Okay, thank you. Request a roll call.
Excuse me. Briefly, just before we do that, this is Sam Severin. Just a quick couple of comments is, one, it just if there's any direction anybody would like to give, otherwise I'll use my discretion and we'll work with the chief. But, for example, I might, after this resolution has been passed, normally in a less of a public safety situation, might send a demand letter enclosing a copy of this draft resolution, or excuse me, of the final resolution, and ask for compliance before filing a suit, those kind of things. If anybody had any direction at this point, you know, as part of a comments, I would appreciate hearing those. Otherwise, we'll just proceed to file the complaint. And just know I'm traveling this week. I'm calling in from Bethel tonight, so it might be to dot the I's and cross the T's might be early next week. And I wanted to note, too, that there may be edits to the draft complaint that you saw earlier, just as I do one more round before filing it, just to make sure I've got everything in there that we want. So I just wanted to interject that before there's a vote and then we just move on. So if there are any further questions or direction, I'd be not in front of the council that often. So I'd like to hear it now, if there is any.
Hey, thank you. We'll see who's got any. Councilman Coleman?
Thank you for that. I think the point here is to get this resolved as quickly as expediently as possible. So I think if that is a means in which to resolve this, where the outcome would basically be the same, and then I would be in favor of moving forward with that. If you present them with that shows the council this is the direction we're going, a lot of times somebody will step up and do the right thing. So I think if that's a viable option, I would like to, instead of going directly to filing the suit, we could possibly do that.
Okay, I appreciate that, and I'll also share that tactically, I commonly like to do that as one last effort, so that when I move for fees, if it doesn't work, I get to say, hey, we've tried. So that's another reason. But I would put a relatively short time frame on a response. You know, not say get back to me in 3 weeks, but you need to do this, or we're filing by a you know, date certain. So yeah, I think it's a good idea.
So if I may, Sam and Councilman Coleman, I want to clarify that the motion to move forward is to authorize him to do the filing, but a step in between that will be to try and get their voluntary compliance in a short time period. That's what I'm hearing.
That's correct, Bill.
Yes.
Sorry. Good question. Thank you.
Okay, that's fine. Any further comment on resolution 2024? Thank you for stepping in, Charles. Appreciate it.
That's Sam, sir.
Sam, sorry.
You're welcome. Glad to be of help.
It's only 9:30. Okay, I'll any further comment, or anybody signed up?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. At this time, I'll request a roll call vote.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Goldman?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
With the roll call vote of 5 yeses and 0 nays, the results of this vote, the council has adopted resolution 2024-24. Our next item are council directives to the city manager. Are there any directives that need to be in motion and moved and seconded? Councilman Bell?
Yeah, this is directly related to 2024-08. Is motion to direct the city manager to research and recommend improvements to the City of Unalaska operating budget process and presentation.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Bell, seconded by Councilman Nicholson. As a directive, research and recommend improvements to the City of Unalaska operating budget process and presentation. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Speak on the motion. I just wanted to put this in a directive to the city manager. Once we get done with the budget process, I think everyone's glad to not see that budget for a while. I tried to keep it as simple as possible so that it gave a large timeline for the city manager and staff to maybe come up with some ideas on how to streamline the process or make a presentation to council and the public a little more easy to understand. I'm not expecting anything in a really short time period because we're not going to look at the budget for quite a while, but when we get out of these processes, we forget about them. And 5-6 months down the road, we'll look at it again. Oh, and it's like, hey, maybe we should have a better process for this. So that's the intent behind that directive. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further comment? Councilman Coleman?
Is this intended to work in parallel with the fiscal sustainability plan, or is that totally something different still?
I think Councilman Bell is looking at something different.
You're looking at something, because in the sustainability plan, it talks about CMMP budgeting process, but this is different.
I think, as I understand it, they're somewhat related because it's budgeting and all that. I can tell you that the staff were looking at better ways and how to do it. So,
I think this,
coming to work with you all and how what you're looking for is probably the number one goal, and how to make it.
I think that this directive would enforce the fiscal sustainability plan that we're looking into. So that's nothing wrong with it. Well,
yeah, the other part of that is, you know, every year there's an election and we have theoretically can turn over two council people at a time.
So you end up with new people in here all the time and making some presentation or format that's a little easier for the newest council member to understand, I think is a good goal. Just to help with the whole process. I know for myself, it took a couple of years of being on council to really get a decent grasp on the budgeting process and what all the numbers say and how it's presented. And still, you know, this many years later, I still have a lot of questions when we get into this process. So anything we can do to streamline that, I think will be beneficial.
Okay, thank you. Any further comments? Councilman Luby?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think, like he said, every council, you know, you get new council members, and it's kind of like when you go to a doctor or something, you don't want the term, a lot of the terminology, and, you know, a lot of that's confusing. And it's not just that, but, you know, just a process, and so that we're not constantly asking a lot of questions too. And I think there can be a good streamline for it. I do think it kind of goes with what you were saying. I think, well, it could be encompassed in that. It could be added to it, but I'll support this. So I think it's a good thing to do.
Okay, thank you. And for the comments on the motion. All right, hearing none, a roll call, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Thank you. On a roll call vote of 5 yeas and 0 nays, the directive has been approved. At this, any further directives? Before we hit the stage, okay. Community input and announcements. This is a final opportunity to provide information to the council or make announcements to the community. Are there any further announcements? Is anyone on Zoom or telephone with comments?
No, sir. No one indicated that they would like to make a comment.
Okay. No one? Okay. Okay. This time I'll request a motion to go into executive session.
I move to adjourn into executive session to discuss personal and financial matters related to the PSEA negotiation, which if discussed in public might negatively impact the interests of the city.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungle, second by Councilman Nicholson to go into executive session. Roll call, please.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
On a roll call vote of 5 yeses to go into executive session. Been approved. We're in an executive session at 9:32. And